Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
You can find everything about the program, including years and years and years.
Ten years
to be exact, of archives at wethepeopleradio.us. And I've got some new tabs up there. If you haven't tuned in a while, we've got all the shows about veterans issues. We've got coalesced under a tab, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, marijuana, and some bad government bureaucrats under the bad eggs tab. And everything else is listed in the archives. You are free to give those to people. I don't care what you do with them, really. They're MP3 files that are commercial free. Doesn't cost you anything to download them. I mean, if you wanted to burn them on CDs and sell them, you can do it. Just get the word out, for heaven's sakes. There's a lot of information that is not being given to the public on lots of different issues. China, to be exact, actually. So we'll be discussing China today.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of things on China. It's really important. We need to pay attention, and unfortunately, we're not being told a whole heck of a lot. I'll be adding a thing to the webpage for today, actually. I kind of forgot to do it, but the Epoch Times does a terrific job. E-P-O-C-H Times.com. And your first month, unless that deal is gone, but I think it's kind of always on, your first month is $1. And they have a really good online website, just full of news, and they will send you an actual hard copy newspaper if you want it once a week. Yeah. And it'll take you a week to read it.
I was just reading an article in there today about how China pretty much owns Angola now. Their oil imports or exports all go to China, and all the money goes to China, and Angola's broke.
Huh, imagine
worked,
that.
Yeah, it worked out good for China.
So anyway, if you're kind of sick of the mainstream media and the fact that they're all talking about the same thing and most of it is imaginary, the Epoch Times is a really nice alternative. And if you have friends or relatives who really like the newspaper, and that's why they still get whatever newspaper they're getting, spend a buck and get them the Epoch Times and see what they think. All righty, our first guest is... Trapped on hold, yes. Trapped on hold, fabulous.
Yeah. And he's here somewhere.
Yeah, there he is.
Our friend Bruce Moran is with us. He is the National Security Advisor with Security Solutions Technology, and he focuses on all sorts of strategic planning and national security things. They work with think tanks, government agencies, the U.S. government, and just a wealth of information. We've got a whole list of shows. I haven't counted them lately, but I've got them all listed on today's page if you'd like to go back and look at different things. Lots of things on border security, and we thought it was time to discuss China. Actually, Bruce thought it was time to discuss China, and we were kind of already doing it, so thanks for coming on and boosting our knowledge today.
You are very welcome. We are looking at a whole host of pervasive problems in national security that have moved into a area where we're not addressing all the problems that have happened over the last 30 years. President Trump has made steps in the right direction in addressing it with President Xi, but as we talk about what we've lost, it's going to be hard to start to regain it unless a larger, more comprehensive national security program with China gets underway. So we can call it refreshing our national security team and making sure that our intellectual property rights, our dual-purpose technology, that would be dual-purpose technology would be military, commercial, that's easily converted over, and that's continuously being stolen with our American companies over there.
Well, also also given away. I mean, look at what Google's doing now, working with the Chinese and developing multi-use programs. It's pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm. But their 3PLA, you know, that's their Fort Meade NSA. Google is like a blip for them. They're really advanced in doing those kind of insidious you call cyber attacks and indoctrination, you would see that they have done a large extent of propaganda. And this started, you know, with the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution. So this is not anything new. It's just now that we have technology, and the Chinese are really good at this at their fingertips, they're able to move quicker, faster than most people are because they're looking at a monolithic chain of command. You know, you got a command and control, but it's monolithic unity. So they're able to find out sooner, quicker, faster about what's going on in their country. One of the things I identified was I think you had them on the Falun Gong. But my purpose was not about the Falun Gong itself. It was how the Falun Gong have been compromised, and spies have been able to neutralize a lot of the things they've done, and how they're able to exploit the apparatus and the organization of the Falun Gong. So I when people talk about the Falun Gong, it's a different perspective for me, looking at the espionage side of it, how it's working, to what extent it's working, and, we're not looking at it as a spiritual, religious, or a cult. We're looking at it as how has the Chinese government been able to use it to their advantage, and how they're able to exploit it and then manipulate it and infiltrate the followers. So that's how, you know, we look at things a little bit differently. And that's how it's done across the board in China, and then it's exported, because the Falun Gong had, oh, they said 10 to 70 million followers, and, you know, they're here in the United States, so what does that mean? And that's the question that's always asked.
Well,
I can keep talking, but do you have any questions or do you have any ideas?
No, it's okay. Keep going.
All right.
We won't derail.
Okay. So if we're looking at the Chinese government itself and President Xi with the monolithic unity command and control power, we're looking at institutionalized, what we call stealing of our property rights. This is, you know, we're talking about intellectual property rights and our dual-purpose technology. What does that mean? That means that's the way they conduct business. That's normal and customary. That's their nationalistic program. Now, people complain about, you know, certain, you know, politicians in our country being nationalistic, but if you look at the way the communist government runs, it's strictly down there. Right. It's a line and, you know, staff nationalistic control, and how they're using that. And we can call it psychops, you know, and with their CPLA and with their military intelligence and with their spies, then you have a whole confluent, purposed, moving, large exposure in the United States and with our U.S. companies abroad. And like I was saying, we don't know to what extent all our companies over there, individually or collectively, have been compromised. So that's a question that needs to be addressed, you know, when they have the business meetings at the White House. That's, you know, this report went into the White House earlier. I was telling you that this has been redacted. So this is more for general consumption of the American public now. And as you know, your broadcast is going to Europe and overseas, Ukraine and Israel. They'll all be looking at this and understanding what has been written here and to what extent, how pervasive this is. And it's not only the United States, as I was saying, you're saying Angola, but Constant Mangus, as it was reported, you know, in his book, China the Gathering Threat. This is back in 2005. This was going on back then. The Chinese, as Bill was saying, they come in and they help your country, they get you going economically, and then all of a sudden you become gradually dependent. And the more dependent you become, the more the Chinese can start influencing your government. We see certain of these kind of instances happening in the Panama Canal. Because the Chinese government.
Hang on to that thought, Bruce, before we head there, and we've got to take
a really quick break.
Yep, no, and, I should direct people to the webpage because there's a tremendous amount of information that you sent for us today, and they can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. That is the question, isn't it? Hey, so I had a little miscue in the first part. I told you it was epictimes.com. Yeah, don't do that unless you can read Chinese. It's
oops. I turned that one over, too.
Yeah, I put that up. I was like, oh, it's all in Chinese. What happened? It's the Epic Times. So T-H-E-E-P-O-C-H times.com.
You need the
in front of it. Otherwise, you have to have special skills that we don't have because we all know Americans only know one language. Okay, not all of them, but, you know, mostly all of them. All right, Bruce, go to the Panama Canal.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Well,
back to the Panama
this
Canal.
This goes back when we turned over the Panama Canal. So, let's say, 98, 99, and we had Fort Sherman and Fort Davis down there, and it kind of protected it. And once we pulled out, we also had Air Force Base on the east side, too. Then we had our College of America's training down there, too. So we were training people to, you know, guard the area, prevented the cartels from coming through. But let's get to the point I'm trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese were all pervasive down there at that time, and now they're even more so now. And what we saw happening in the last 3 or 4 years, they're institutionalizing Mandarin to be taught in the Panamanian schools. So,
wow.
That's what Bill was saying. This is what Constance Mangus was saying back in like 2001, 2002, 2003. If you take it forward, how does that work? Well, in 1971, China was allowed into the UN Security Council, and Taiwan was subsequently ousted, you can say. So then China had a favorable position in security of the world. From that time, then you move forward, they were also allowed to be part of the World Trade Organization. And that's very big, because now if you become a most favored nation status country, you're able to, you know, really conduct trade. So if you looked at what happened to Panama Canal, then they became part of that favored nation status that was in 2000, and everything was exponentially moving for the Chinese to happen to what Bill was saying in Angola and other countries around the world. I mean, there's other countries that have resources of copper, you know, and that's all near Lake Chad and over there. And you see a lot of influence of the Chinese community down there, too. Libya, I don't know if you knew about Libya at all. They built the oil refineries there. There's a lot of things that are happening in North Korea. That was oil refineries for help being built by the Chinese, too. They have a worldwide footprint I was talking about. And when I went into the history of it, I said when Sun Yat-sen had passed away in 1925 and then Chiang Kai-shek took over, it was a 23-year battle between the two of them. What I'm saying is Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong, between the Nationalist Party and the Communist Party. Eventually, as you looked at 1947, 1949, it was coming to a head. But a large part of the Nationalist Party, the Kuomintang, was weakened because they had fought the bigger battles, you know, the Sinoid battle over on the over in Shanghai, and they lost that battle. And then the Japanese Imperial forces had moved from Shanghai directly into Nanjing. And there was a whole series of problems that happened there. And since such time, that was like in 1937, 38, 39, Chiang Kai-shek moved his capital from Beijing to the Sichuan province in Chongqing. So they were there in Chengdu. So in those areas, they had to move west, and that's where they were operating under the Special Asia Command with the United States. So they have a history that people should read about that I had give a quick summary that gives you a quick idea of how these things progressed and how Stalin helped Mao up in the Zhejiang province up there north. But without that help, it might have changed the whole history of China in favor of the Nationalist Party. So, I think what Bill is saying is true. I mean, you have a larger world footprint, but in terms of what I've been expressing in the report, it's how it's happened and what extent it's happened to and how our American companies have been exploited and, you can say, infiltrated in a way where it's not healthy for us anymore. And we need to take into account how jobs are being lost, how our technology is being stolen, how China is actually ascending to a world prominent power, moving quicker, faster than people normally expected because they're stealing these things right out the door. If it's not nailed down, you know, it goes out. I put that in a report so people can read about that. So it has a lot of, if you think about what happened in the Wild West and everybody was just kind of battling for, you know, territories and hanging on, and that's what, well, that's what's going on now, but it's highly sophisticated with technology, and the Chinese are far more experienced at this because they have a history of knowing it through their practices of running their country. China's not a young country. It goes back to, you know, to the 2,000, 3,000 years. So their leaders and their scholars are part and parcel. They call it the Chinese scholars, or we call them university professors, but they're part of this whole idea of helping the culture evolve and President Xi becoming the, you know, single leader, and he doesn't have to be elected, but it's more than that. It's monolithic unity, and you're looking at a whole different conceptual framework the Chinese work from to survive, or call it survival of the fittest, than we have here. We're this open country. We want everybody to do things and, you know, participate in freedom and democracy, but the Chinese are concentrating on them, their soul survival, and how they're going to be the power in the world. So we have to take that into account in everything we're doing in China through our State Department. As you look at what President Trump has done, he started changing this whole paradigm. What I call it, it's the Pandora's Confucian box problem, because if you look at that Pandora box, that means it's everywhere, you know, omnipresent. And that's what has happened. Once they were part of the World Trade Organization, once they became a member of the UN Security Council in 1971, they were able to go to town and their economy grew. And if you go to Beijing or Chengdu or Shanghai, their cities are really modern, you know, and they have to take care of 1.4 billion people. They have four megacities. I mean, those are 20 million or more.
Yeah,
so that's a whole different concept to think of what the Chinese have to do in keeping their country going and to keep it as a world power, than how we think of ourselves as a country. It's a change of thought. Like I said, you need to refresh the national security people in what they're thinking about, what's going down, and how we're going to survive as this has taken place. Because you have to start changing your policy and your programs in relationship to foreign diplomacy. And Mike Pompeo is starting to do that. He's only new. I mean, I say new, but everybody says, oh, 2 years in, you know, he's experienced. No. Their leaders have been in 20 years, 30 years, you know, and they're looking at Mike Pompeo coming in and saying, well, Mike will be gone, or President Trump will be gone, you know. These are just youngsters, you know.
Right. They've always played the long game. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The strategic planning, the long-term 30-year plans are way beyond our scope of how we're planning, and we have to deal with what our economy and the next presidential election or the next congressional elections and everybody's, you know, I stay away from that, as you know, and I'm always dealing with the policy, but that's part and parcel to the way the Chinese are thinking. You know, will President Trump be gone? But President Trump, as you saw, stated that. He says, I'm going to act now. I'm going to act in a cohesive manner. I'm going to get things done. And you see, you know, the North Korean President Kim coming around, and but there's a lot of different things, as we're saying, that are working at these converging Confucian Pandora box that the Chinese have been undertaking for the entire history of their country. Now it's a communist country, solid. They have a whole different point of view than we do, a whole different philosophy. You know, it's a different way of thinking, and it's just ours is different. And ours is based on, you know, the Constitution, you know. Ours is based on the Declaration of Independence. And we have a whole different framework that we have to work from that needs to be understood. And American people can't be taken to cleaners thinking that this is not a serious problem.
Well,
this is more serious and grave than Americans are understanding it to be, and they must go forward. Americans must come up and support these efforts to understand what's happened to the United States.
Yeah, you know, I think people look at the technology theft and they think it's all about cell phones or, you know, toasters or whatever it is. And yeah, they can knock off pretty much anything that we can make. They just get one, go there, you know, and make it cheaper because, as we've discussed with some of our friends that are Chinese dissidents, they're paying slave wages if they're paying wages at all. And so we're basically supporting people being oppressed at an incredibly harsh level. And then a lot of those things have technology that has a military application. And that's the part that I'm not sure that we've fully wrapped our mind around.
Well, that was one of the articles I was reading today also, was that I believe a professor in one of the California state universities was involved in developing a program that was for video games. It was an entertainment program that is now, they think, is going to turn up in a... it's called Moving Target, and it's going to show up in their fighter jets, where they can track high speed targets in the air, and with artificial intelligence, they can predict where that target's going to be and basically shoot it down.
Well, and for those folks who think, well, you know, then Americans have to be complicit in that, and obviously they're doing that on purpose, and et cetera. Please listen to our show that was March 10th. That's listed on our China tab. March 10th of 2019, it was with Mary Todd about her son, Dr. Shane Truman Todd, who was murdered because he knew, once he looked at what it was they wanted him to bring from America to the company he was working for in China, he said, hey, wait a second, I think this is basically going to be treason, and I'm not doing it. So I'm quitting the company, I'm going back home, and then magically he committed suicide.
Yeah.
In a way that actually wasn't possible, and I think we've seen plenty of that. And I don't think he was friends with the Clintons
the
either.
The technology is called gallium nitride. He was in our missile defense system.
Yep.
It's also used in telecommunications, and that's Hawaii, you know, the Chinese communications company. And if you go to the next level of communications, you know, you're at the G levels, fine. That's how you surpass, because the Chinese have no parameters in how to exploit that. We
right.
do. We have our federal ban list. We have everything ordered and structured.
See, and that's what he was doing, was working on cell phones, and that was what he was supposed to be working on. But he was smart enough to know that it had a military application, and he wasn't doing it. We've got to take another really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Bruce Moran, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
If I'm really with you now, or just chasing after some fun.
Exactly. You've been warned. Hey, Bruce, can we go to the part, the FBI Director Christopher Wray section that you sent to us?
Sure. That's part and parcel to what we can talk about, of course.
Honestly, the one statistic that I got to just read, in 2018, there were 340,000 Chinese students in the United States, which was 30%, and 30% of all foreign students are Chinese. 15% in PhDs, 32% in master's degrees, and 36% in bachelor's degrees. So, you know, just in case you think these guys are not playing for keeps, they super are. And our guest the next hour, just a spoiler alert, our guest, Dr. Chen, in the next hour is going to talk about what he sees as somebody who came to this country from China and what they're up to. He's done a couple shows with us previous, but anyway, he'll be able to highlight some of that. But what was this investigation on that they were working on, the non-traditional spying stuff?
This is what we know. There's 1,000 ongoing FBI investigations on China. That tells us that there's a lot more going on, but we can open up 1,000 that can go to the courts. So things that are happening on the state and municipal levels and that are more insidious, that we only have 13,500 FBI agents, you know, or you can say 15,000 with support of, you know, stuff out of Quantico. And then you got the other ones who are working on, what we're talking about on these other investigations. So how many people do you need to keep abreast on what's going on in the United States and how our companies are being exploited by foreign countries? Just not China, but China's the biggest, you know, offender, but other countries too, you know. And as we're looking at it, there's a method that they call in China. They use their scholars for designing their national security 30-year plans, but they're also using them for their military intelligence purposes. So that's the 3PLA. That's PSYCOPS and things like that. So the people who we're looking at, you know, are highly educated people. And their job is to work with the military intelligence, the government, the Hall of the People, and to have a unity of command and a philosophy that coincides across the board, all the way down to the people in the military itself. So they all have the same purpose. And once that is in line, then you have a different nationalistic ideology versus the United States independent thinkers. And, you know, it's more in line with the doctrine of the Communist Party. And here it is. This is what you do. Here's how you do it, you know.
Now, are these people both Chinese nationals and Chinese Americans that are involved in this?
That's right.
Wow. So we really don't, well, I guess we could prosecute Chinese nationals if they're in this country, but...
Okay, if you go down to the information I sent you on the prosecution of 2018 of the student, was a student at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that? Ji Chaokwang, 27 years old. He was a spy. He's at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Excuse me for a second. He came here in 2013 on a student visa, studying engineering. Then he enlisted in the U.S. Army Reserves in 2016. And then he was arrested subsequent to that time for recruiting... you know, U.S. engineers, defense contractors, and scientists.
You skipped Dianne Feinstein that time?
That answers his question.
Decided she's already covered.
Yeah. But that's... So we have, you know, 30% of all our foreign students are from the Chinese background. Okay. Now, where are they at? What are they doing? To what extent are they doing it? That's the question Bill is asking. And this is what I'm saying. Do we have enough people to cover this kind of pervasive, institutionalized stealing that goes on, that's promoted by the Chinese government, because they're not following any protocol? It's like the Wild West. You come in, you take over the town, and you control it. You bring in your own sheriff.
Right.
And, you know, you go do the cattle rustling on other people's land, and you take their cows and their, you know, steers, and you bring it to your property, and you brand it with your own brand. That's what they're doing. They're taking on intellectual property rights. They're, what the professor was saying that you have on next is that they manufacture over there, and the labor is a lot cheaper. And that's what they're doing. I mean, that's the same thing that I'm conveying here, but in a different way. Because this is all about espionage. It's all about the insidious behavior that's been going on, and we've been taken to the cleaners, and we have to refresh our national security strategy to counter this, because this is taking away jobs. It's taking away our ability to progress as a country and help other countries out. I mean, we really want to help other countries out, just not China. You know, China's 1.4 billion people, and President Xi is very influential in the UN. I mean, they're brilliant. The Chinese are brilliant. They're brilliant strategists, but they're also Machiavellian at the same time. So how are you going to deal with that unless you call them on a table and have negotiations for, you know, bilateral agreements to stop this, and then get your companies to start supporting your efforts on these national security programs? See, the national security program itself has to encompass a comprehensive way to utilize a strategy that will help keep jobs in the United States, bring jobs back home, which President Trump is saying, but it has to be more focused on the larger picture, the strategic picture. So, you know, President Trump is saying things like that, and Secretary Mike Pompeo is trying to institute those programs, but to get it in full gear, Congress has to come on board. They have to pass laws. They have to help the American people understand better what's going on, to what extent it's happening, and where it's going at, so they become aware that it doesn't happen in their local communities. Now, if you look at this one example, I left four examples with you of the Midwest. And this is going on all over the country at different times. This is just in 2018, so we're not covering anything. You know, there are like 12 more examples, but I left these four examples because it gives you an overall picture of the different kinds of ways these things happening. These things are transpiring. So let's look at the. Did you see the one where it said Chinese wind turbine company got convicted of stealing energy software?
Talk about that one. That's pretty interesting.
This is pervasive. So there was a fellow who was in Vienna, Austria. He was a Serbian guy, Dijan Karabasovic, and he had was paid by the Chinese government $1.7 million. He's over there. But he's also helping develop the software for our companies over here. So he's taking it and giving it to the Chinese from over there. So you have this activity going on in Europe that's happening in the United States, in Wisconsin, and it's impacting the Wisconsin company. And they were brought into federal court, and the attorney general said these thefts cost $1 billion in shareholders' equity and 700 jobs. That's not small peanuts.
No.
This is just one example. How many more of these have gone undiscovered? That's what I'm saying.
Well, and they operate under all these company names, and half of them, if not all of them, are tied directly back to the Chinese government.
That is correct. I don't want to be a pedantic, but it's so brave in how you're expressing. It's they're purposely integrated into a fine network of buying capabilities that it's beyond most people's comprehension.
Jeez. Well, it sounds like you're having an event again in Chicago. I guess we'll hear about it at the end of the weekend. Another exciting weekend in Chicago. Or Bruce, stay behind your bulletproof shield there. We'll be right back. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Don't go anywhere. We're not over yet.
Served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a statue of a Liberty started shaking. Of the red, white, and blue.
Oh. Just in case you thought we were admitting defeat, we're not. So Bruce, in our final minutes here, what I know we've skipped tons of stuff, but I thought you were leaving at the end. You're like, okay, bye. It's like, no, wait, don't go anywhere.
Okay.
What? We still got 10 minutes left. What? Honestly, if you were going to look at what the administration's been working on, and I know you guys have been helping them, what is it that people aren't hearing? I know that's kind of a long list, but maybe the really important stuff on China that people aren't hearing anything about or actually are being told things that aren't true. Anything you'd like to clear up there?
Well, I think China is the number one threat, Russia second, okay? They put Russia because of the investigations as a primary threat, but China far exceeds them in a lot of these areas. So that's one of the things that should be looked at. But I'm not in control of the media, and I look at it from a pure national security point of view. And to me, this is your whole economic freedom basic foundation. If we lose that, we're not losing it to Russia, we're losing it to China.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the great problem here. It's this stealing of intellectual property rights or technology or software. It's just not in these bigger companies. It's in the United States, in the boutique companies, in the commercial, industrial. You know, it's across the board. If they like something, they'll take it, and if they can use it, they'll use it. If not, they just discard it. But they're investigating everything that's applicable to help better their society. Looking at it that way. They're looking at everything that we're doing, and can they use it in their society to better their society? Because they got 1.4 billion people.
Sure.
They got that many people to feed, you know, President Xi does, you know. That's another way of looking at it. Survival of the fittest. Why not take what you can take while you can get it?
Yeah, especially if we make it, you know, easy or available. And then what about the military application? How much of our, I don't even know if we can quantify how much time we spent on that.
Up there. That was back in the 90s, and, you know. Their ability to go to space was basically having our technology. Their Air Force jets are streamlined the same way ours have been. They got into Lockheed Martin, and they got our military transport software, and the person was prosecuted during the previous administration. So,
well don't they basically
have
a PM? They have a
OK. Okay, you want to talk about something different, but can I say something for like a minute?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. They got into OPM, and they get all the security clearances for everybody that is at that level. Now, if they're doing that, and they're able to use the metadata, and then use that to find out who these people are and what they're doing, how they're doing it, and then they're following them around, and then you'll see what I put in there. It's the Lions Club or the Knights of Columbus or any of these organizations. Then what they're going to do is they'll be able to trace these people and get closer to them, then spy on them. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to trace where they're at, what part of the government they're working for, and have a better way of spying on them. That's what that metadata collection does for them. That's what our NSA does, but the China, like I said, has a CPLA, and they're very good at it, and they've done it. And they're as Bill was saying, Google. Well, what if they come in through Google? Then do you find out? Facebook and find out people's children's activities and trace it back to them.
Yeah,
so what I call it is reverse reciprocal relationship. You go to the furthest extreme, and you trace this all back to the source. And once you find out the source, which is somebody who has a secret, top secret security clearance, mm-hmm. and all these people are affiliated with them, you know where they're at, what they're doing, where to go to dinner, And then you put people around them to find out actually how to compromise them or to find out actually what they're doing. And then they intercept their phones.
Nice.
That's scary.
And in case people aren't familiar, when they stole the OPM files, that's the Office of Personnel Management. So that's basically everybody who works for the federal government. So when you hear OPM, that's a very big group. And you've got people who do basic stuff, and you've got people who do big stuff, and we don't necessarily want their information out there at all, ever.
Right.
That's security clearances. People with security clearances, uh-huh. That's how many they got, 100,000 plus, at least 120,000. That's a lot of security clearances, and at different facets of the government. Department of Energy is huge, right? Nuclear. Then we got the people in the military. That's huge. Or people who are developing things at DARPA. Those are security clearances, too. I mean, we have our people who are doing weapons development, people in Lockheed Martin, people in the private industry. That's what we're talking about.
And what I had heard was that the program that OPM used to keep track of their records was developed by the Chinese. They had some hand in developing it. And lo and behold, at the time I didn't even read further because I thought, oh my gosh, we're just such dopes. They had built a back door into that program. So then it's like, well, here you go. We did all the work for you. Here it is. And it's like, we're just going to go in the back and take all your stuff. Is that real or was that fake? Did I just believe it too quickly?
There are back doors built in by everything. So NSA does it, CIA does it, and,
But did the Chinese actually help develop the program that OPM used to keep track of all the employees?
I'm not aware of that. I'll have to go and ask around.
I should go look that up again.
Covering that.
All right.
I'm more or less dealing with what we're dealing with now.
Yeah, no problem.
You're talking about 6 or 7 years ago.
I know, and when I read it, I just blew it off because it sounded like,
we're working on border security and making sure that, stuff. You're talking about, a lot of things that we work on, but to go into specific detail about that, I would have to make further inquiries, so I can't give you a solid answer.
All right. I just thought maybe you remembered or had looked it up. I'll have to do some checking on that. Now I'm curious again.
The Chinese have been providing programs for different things like that, though, or people who are Chinese are working for American companies, and they can themselves put in a back door. Maybe that's what you're saying, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's other ways of doing it. I mean, that was... I can't talk about some things because they're things we've worked on, but back doors are there, and what you're saying is possible. I can say that.
Okay.
And could be more likely.
Yeah. Well, it sounded like something we might have overlooked. It was right about the same time as the Awan brothers were working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and stealing and running the IT for the House of Representatives.
It's like, with China, you see what I mean?
Yeah. It's like,
so you have that convergence of forces that are supporting each other's interests. That's what my concern has been. And, you know, Chuck talked about it on the radio with you and with,
yeah.
With Dan, too. So I'm more, I looked at it as a larger problem, strategic problem, and Congress should have addressed it, both in the House and Senate.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
It wasn't properly addressed. That's how I look at it.
No.
And for them to make it a political and to, you know, really holler at the sergeant of arms and the security that came in, to me that's, you know, uncalled for.
Yeah.
I mean, and plus they found it in the garage, and I guess he's renting the home of a Marine.
Yeah, all the hard drives and everything.
Yeah, all that, and this government property. Well, that's a whole, you know, different ball of wax. I mean, you got a security problem, then they caught him at the airport trying to get away. So, I mean, I know this stuff, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into that.
It was unfortunate that ship sailed without truly taking out the crew, because those guys had gotten into all sorts of stuff. But I think the stuff with China is a lot more subtle, and we don't always hear about it, you know, all the moving parts of that. So it's good to know we're all, you know, we're focusing. I mean, 1,000 investigations. Who knew that? That was good.
And that's not enough. You know, like I'm saying, the FBI, you can say, is 3,500 up to 15,000 with supportive, you know, services, the technicians and everything. And you see up to 30,000 if you include, you know, but you got to take out all the attorneys, you know. You need the investigators out there in the regional offices, and then you got to staff the regional offices with FBI people are trained in Quantico and know how to handle people, you know, with arms.
Sure.
You want lawyers going out there, you know, just taking them into the federal courts. You know, it's a different.
Yeah, you can't just talk them to death.
No. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the attorneys. And,
I know. I'm just
kidding. I know,
around.
But I mean, I don't want to. The FBI's been taking a lot of browbeating lately.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, and you know, my friends are from there and from ATF and all over, you know, and the Langley and
we are into the last 20 seconds, so we got to.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And all the stuff that's going on.
Okay, this is the real sign off, Bruce. So we thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody that we know that supports our efforts, the Heritage Foundation, and we're working with people at the White House and Congress, and, you know, their efforts are right on. It's just really hard. It's really difficult. And this particular issue is not being fully addressed. That's what I need to say.
All right.
Thanks, Bruce.
Well, thanks. I'm sure we'll touch it again. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, here at KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Bill, you got anything for us?
No, I was just...
Thought I'd just change it up there and throw you off guard.
No, you're not going to throw me off guard because I was reading about the Falun Gong. So all up to speed.
Oh, well, you can do that. You can announce that part then.
Yeah.
You can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. So today our focus is China. So the first half was national security. And the second half we have our guest Dr. Chen with us again. And last time that we were speaking with him, there were little bits and pieces of his personal story that came out. And so I asked him if he'd be okay to maybe come on and share a little bit of that with us. But I've got his bio on the page for today, and it's relatively comprehensive, so I won't read it all. But he's been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been a spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China, and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism in 1989 when he helped organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. And he was outraged by the June 4th massacre, and I'm sure that we'll hear more about that. He was elected vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. And just the story of people who have come from China and realized what they were up to, and our friend June, who's been on before, her story follows that same pattern. So we were curious to hear from you, sort of what your journey looked like, and how you wound up where you are.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm so honored to be invited back.
Love having you back.
I want to share the things that may or may not known by Americans. I remember that quite a few years ago, so long ago, I don't even remember how many years, but the best friend of mine in America, we talked about a little bit about my life, well, it just came up, and I told him about when I was entering the college, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to take my own desired area for study. And I'll talk why I have that privilege of opportunity. And totally unprepared, that was one thing that touched him the most. He was, it brought him to tears. And I was quite surprised. And he said this to me. He said, "Shizhang, you did not know that how much this means to us, America. We take things for granted." Mm-hmm. And when you tell me that students in China, at least at my time, did not have the freedom to choose what you study, your area of interest, that is so shocking, so shocking. So I really don't, I'm not sure what will touch Americans more. So I will try to cover this more details that may help them to understand what is communism like. And so they wouldn't think about socialism, and they wouldn't go even near that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so let me start with how I got to where I am. So I was born in 1962, 4 years before the Cultural Revolution. So my childhood, from 1966 to 1970, that was 10 years of Cultural Revolution. So from 4 to 14 or 15, that 10 years of Cultural Revolution. During the Cultural Revolution, the country's education totally stopped. Colleges shut down. Elementary and middle school, they're not shut down, but they're pretty much non-functional. Give you a story. This is a true story. People like in my age all know about it, but the Communist Party has basically castrated that part of history out of the memory of Chinese people. They cover it up. Okay, so during the Cultural Revolution, the teachers dare not to teach, and the students do not have to study. And it was called the Cultural Revolution, so everything is revolution. But basically, everything is rebel. And there's this, there's several role models of students who would, when the test time came, like the final exam, they would turn in the test sheet without answering any question. And they would be set up as a role model for the country's young kids, because they would be like rebel. The concept of rebel, how do I make a connection with Americans? So One of the things I remember, this may not be completely accurate, but that's what I remember, Hillary Clinton's role model was, I don't remember the professor's name, but that professor, you know, think Lucifer is a, you know, the first revolutionary because he rebelled against God, okay? It's that kind of
wow. That sounds about right. Yeah, Lucifer's yeah. role model. What a great idea.
Yeah. So,
definitely something I want to emulate.
Yeah, that was the kind of things that, you know, that influenced that generation, that 10 years of Cultural Revolution. Everything is upside down. So, finally, the country is about to be bankrupt, you know, towards the end of Cultural Revolution. The Cultural Revolution was brought to an end because Mao Zedong's death. And then the country has to get back on its feet. And the authorities at that time want to revive the education which has been shut down for 10 years. And so they want to have some role model. Kids who studied, kids who were, you know, talented. And so the education authority went around the whole country to search for this kind of a young, talented student. They found 21 of them, and they put them into a special program called, you know, depends, there are different names for it, but some were called, you know, accelerated student program, some were called genius program. 21 of them, and I was one of them. So, I, at the age of 15, I was admitted to that program hosted by China University of Science and Technology. It was a big deal at that time. You know, we were on TV, you know, at that time we didn't know we're, you know, young celebrities. So I was just fortunate to be in that kind of situation. And because of that, because that we were kind of special, I was able to choose my own area of study. And I chose biology. Other students at that time weren't lucky. They would attend the national exam for entering college, and then a lot of them, their area of study was decided by the state, by the authority.
And so it wasn't your parents, it wasn't you, it wasn't your skill set, it was basically the government decides, like, what you're going to be when you grow up, and you have to go off, learn that, and that basically forms your whole life. Gosh, how could that ever go wrong? And gee, why wouldn't people be deliriously happy about that? Imagine they're not deliriously happy. We have to take a really quick break. Just not to spoiler alert, but Dr. Chen does have a PhD in molecular biology. So we'll hear more about that here in a minute. You're listening to We the People.
Slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise? So long. 'Cause I have
have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awaken from these dreams. People go just where they will. I never noticed them until I got this feeling that it's later than it seems. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see. I hear their cries. Just say if it's too late for me.
It's never too late. Especially when you're 15 years old and you get to go to the gifted program at China University. So tell me this. I was thinking on the break, Dr. Chen. Were you not allowed to go to school between the ages of 4 and 14? I mean, was there no school? Did you have homeschool?
There was school, but there are not real school. Let me describe to you.
Was it like American school? You can tell us.
No, not at all. It was,
were they having climate protests instead of classes?
Right. So there was no college. The university was shut down, that's for sure.
Okay.
But then the elementary school, middle school, they were more and more dysfunctional because the student would rebel against teacher, and the teacher would not. They dare not to be responsible. And so, let me give you a glimpse of it. Okay, so towards third grade to fifth grade at that time, where I was like 10 to 12 years old. The teacher, okay, gave us something called open book test.
Okay.
Where the exam are not really exams anymore. They will give you a test, you know, a sheet with questions you can take home.
Oh.
You can you know, look through the book to for an answer.
We used to call that homework, but okay.
right. And then, of course, the student, I mean, without discipline, they don't even want to do that. So for several years, I was whenever it was. The test time came, I became the target of the, my classmates, because they'll copy my answer.
Oh.
And once I took this test sheet to home, and then started to look through the textbook, and my father just happened to saw what I was doing, and he got very upset. I rarely see him get that upset. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, that's what teacher told us, I mean, the school told us to do. And he said, as far as you are my son, you're not allowed to do this, okay? Close your book. By the way, both my parents, or side of family, they were educated. My father's father, was one of the earliest Chinese students educated abroad. He was educated in Canada. My mother's father was educated in France. And so my mother's father later became president of the, at that time, top university, Shenzhen University. And my father's father became a top engineer of the country. So my family, for several generations, they really pay attention to education. So my father, understandably, now I understand. At that time, I didn't.
Yeah, he looks at you doing an open book test, and it's like,
Right. And so that saved me. It wasn't because I probably would be, you know, what do we know? We're just, you know, pre-teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, because of that, I was forced to memorize things, to learn things the right way, and that helped me to get into the special program after Cultural Revolution. But my classmates, they would intercept me and just copy my answer. And so I knew that was wrong because it came from my father. My father told us, so I knew that was wrong. So I would find a way to get my answer to the teacher before they can copy it. That made me the enemy of the class. I was beaten up frequently because whenever they couldn't get my answer, they got upset with me. And that was my life was. But that also, luckily, that gave me some early foundation to know, you know, what basically right and what's wrong. Honest is right and cheating is wrong. That kind of basic things. And they were not taught. Right? They were taught the opposite. When students are not disciplined for that, that destroyed a lot of young kids. Another thing that's I'm going to give you instead of the systematic description, I just give you stories and give you a glimpse of what I have gone through.
Sure.
When I say I became the enemy of the class, there was something that also, besides this, that also made me stood out. So I remember it was the year when I got into the middle school, the first year. And there was this new teacher came in, and then the first thing she came to in the class, she asked us, for all those students who were the offsprings of laborer, people basically, that was a class description. The laborer means peasants, farmers, workers, and all. Those are the people that the Communist Party, the ruling party, are supposed to base the ruling on. So they're the good people. And then those people who are not basically, if we describe in this country's term, it would be blue collar, right? So the blue collar would be the good people, and the white collar would be the bad people. Well, my parents, they're engineers. They're not laborers.
They're
big time
white collar. Yeah.
Right, they're big time white collar. And out of the whole class, there were only two people who were the offspring of white collar. So the two of us did not raise our hands. And so that made us stood out. And it turns out that after the Cultural Revolution is ended, the country was trying to get back to normal, and the school did kind of a survey. And out of the whole school, over 1,000 students in elementary school, middle school, there were only two youngsters who did not smoke. That's me and him. And that's how that system during the Cultural Revolution really ruined. I mean, I wouldn't say completely ruined, but that gave them wrong moral guidance. And so that also made me stood out. And so I was really bullied. I personally knew what's bullied like. I was just often become the target of the class. But of course, that also, at the end of the Cultural Revolution, when the country wanted to revive the education, then I had a little bit of advantage that I studied during the Cultural Revolution while others was led by the system to not study. And so that was my elementary middle school And then in the college, I have always done quite well in my study. And then in my third year, that university, the university I entered, University of Science and Technology, is a five-year university, while all other universities were four-year. When I entered my third year of study, I have done quite well in my course study, the university gave me special permission to take examination, for graduate school, and I passed it. And so I graduated 2 years ahead of, what would be the normal schedule. And then that year was 1981, the first year when China's students have the opportunity to study abroad.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Just happened at the exact same time?
That was the time when China opened.
What are the odds of that? Before we start that part, let's take a really quick break and then we'll come back because I think it's fascinating how you wound up where you did. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
I feel alive. And the world.
That's a huge lie. We can't read your mind. We're kidding. It's just a little joke there. We did not become molecular biologists when we were 18. That did not happen. We've read about people, and now we know one. So you were like 18 years old. You had completed college at that time. And now you were allowed to go. Could you go anywhere, or could you just go to the U.S.?
Well, I happened to come to the U.S. I was given the opportunity to go to France. I did well in the graduate school. So, first of all, about going abroad, okay. The communists come to power in 1949. From 1980, no student were allowed to go abroad study except to go to like the Soviet Union, or the Soviet bloc country, right? And so to anywhere else in the free world, no chance. Right? The 1980 is the 1981 is the first year that there's a very small amount student that the top maybe it's just extremely small number of students allowed to study abroad. They were paid by the government at that time. So I did so well in my graduate school entrance exam. I was one of the students that was in a country select who sent me to study in France. But at the same time, I learned that there are some top university from America is having a program called the China United States Biology Examination Application. These are like the top 100, actually not top 100, top 50 American universities. They got together and they sponsored a program to recruit the brightest students from China to come to pass their test, special design test, and then they will facilitate us to go through the application study in the United States. And so I heard of that one, and I gave up my opportunity to go through France. And that was very bold, because that, you know, that opportunity is like a golden opportunity, and I gave it up. There's a story within it that I don't have time to go into, but I gave that up. And then I passed the COSPIA program to come to the United States. There was that program from the whole country admitted 67 students, and I was one of the 67. So I came to the United States in 1981. So I was 19 years old.
And just to kind of put a little perspective on it at the time, because I know that June has told us when she came here, she thought the communists were great. She thought they were doing a great job. She had been raised with propaganda and had no idea there was any other, you know, any other way, and thought we were all pretending to be free, that we were faking. She said, I think it took her like 10 years to realize we weren't actually faking. When it sounds like maybe your view of things during the Cultural Revolution and all that was slightly different, maybe?
No, quite the same.
Same, okay. So when you came here, did you think we were scary and bad?
I was so young. I have not.
Yeah,
formed.
That's true. You're 19.
My political, you know, ideas. But I was incredibly patriotic. And so I believe in what the government said at that time. Now, to be fair, okay, there was 10 years of a golden time, golden 10 years. Under even the CCP ruling, that's between 1979 to 1989, exactly, just 10 years, right? That was the 10-year so-called reform. And to be fair, I mean, to be, you know, objective, that was 10 years of change. That was relatively good, but that got shut down in 1989, and my life had changed, totally changed because of that. I'll get back to that. But when I came to the United States, I speak very little English, and yet just within the first 2 weeks when I was here, my classmate, American classmate, asked me, am I homesick, or how do I like it? I feel I was born here. I said, how much I fit in this society, because it's just, for some reason, that I just felt the freedom here that I did not have in China. The kind of pressure, the kind of political pressure, the political correctness, and Americans have no idea about what political correctness. What I described to you, you know, the whole class raising their hand and being the labor, being the
you're one of two kids who didn't become a chain smoking blue collar worker.
Right, and that was, we were politically incorrect.
Oh, yeah.
So the political correctness, you know, when just people in this country have no idea what that is. The political correctness in China, under Chinese, under communism, is license to kill, basically. Right? But I, for Jun, for what Jun described, it's true for almost everybody. I changed quite a lot. And that's because when I came to the United States, I learned what I did not learn in China. But my change is slightly different than Jun's. And some people hear what I'm saying, some Chinese people hear what I'm saying, what I describe, may say, okay, you just grew up in the past. China has changed so much. So many people tell me that China has changed so much after the Cultural Revolution. Well, unfortunately, yes, it has changed so much. It has changed, sorry, for worse. China is a lot worse now than even after the Cultural Revolution. And here I want to describe one thing I know, that China has change for worse, and something fundamental never changed. Okay, that's about education. After I came to the United States, I studied in the college. I became a graduate student, but I worked as a teaching assistant. That gave me the exposure to the college education. I'm in a graduate study program, but my TA gave me the opportunity to look into the undergraduate.
Oh, that you had just finished. Sure.
I finished it. Yeah, I was doing the graduate study, but I was teaching the undergraduate. Right. And so I was probably more observant than others. And so I thought of one question that was curious to me, because clearly when I work with undergraduates and those freshmen students, China's freshman students were better prepared. That means that China's high school students, they got their math, they got their physics down better. Yet once you get into the graduate student program, China students is no match compared to American college students. And that made me wonder, say, okay, the transition happened during college. Why there's this transition? And I looked into it, and my discovery shocked me. And I discovered, because in United States education, we have something called a general education. This did not exist in China.
Oh, everything in is China, very specific.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, but the students, the university in United States or in free world is a place to teach civilization. And the ability to develop civilization. So the product of American education or free world education is a human being where you would know the humanity, you would know the history of the civilization, you have the ability to contribute to the furtherment of civilization. Right? Whereas in China, the product I describe as, robot or artificial intelligence. We did not have a general education. I didn't, at least. Right?
Interesting.
We were immediately, put into science, math.
Sure.
You are specialized in the particular area that the government expects you to go out of college and be a machine.
We have a term for that. We call that being pigeonholed.
Yeah, very much
being
so.
Being pigeonholed. And we have to take I can't believe a really quick break. Capitalism is wonderful, but it's so, it just interrupts us all the time. The alternatives are bad, but we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Chen. You're listening to We the People.
Too much money they spend upon the moon. Well, I chew, they make it right. I hope they never sleep at night. They better make some changes and do it soon.
If you're going to study in China, you're not going to see anything yet. You're going to only see what they tell you to see. Gosh, you know, Dr. Chen, we were talking, Bill and I were chatting here during the break, and I'm sure that that creates a really, really competent workforce, maybe, but
you get exactly what you need and no cross-pollination.
But potentially
so
not a super happy workforce.
Well, worse than that, and this is we got to really important topic. The reason I say the product of China's education is just robot or artificial intelligence is that you were given skills, but you were not given value.
Yeah.
And we contribute to maybe line of production. We don't contribute to the development of civilization.
Civilization, yeah.
Is that why? Because it kind of makes sense. Our first hour, we were talking about the intellectual property theft and those things. And they can copy anything, but they don't always invent very much. That makes perfect sense. They're not taught to invent.
The Chinese people is one of the hardest working people. It is the system that forced them to where they are now, forced them to be dishonest. There's a deeper reason for that, but before I go on to there, I want to say this to my fellow Americans. Look out. The value that education gives to young students, this is the most important thing for the youngsters, but also for a country, for a nation, for a future. And look out how the liberals, the progressives, are trying to manipulate our general education system.
Mm-hmm. Take away the history.
Right. Take away the history, demonizing the history.
Yeah. Demonizing actually debate and thought and the free exchange of ideas.
Right. And so, let me go back to China. And that explains why I don't think they would need graduate school even now. Right? At least from 1949 to 1990, there's really no graduate study program in China, no real one. I mean, they're in the name of that, but what do I mean by real graduate student, graduate study? Okay. This is my viewpoint of the free world education, where when you go through a four-year program, education, you came out a college student, you still don't know what you're going to do for your career. And that's why it's very common. A larger percentage of college graduates, they would go out to work for 1 or 2 years. And then they will develop what they will be really interested in. And they'll go to graduate school. That's where they do their specialized study. After the specialized study, they focus on one area. They're a doctor, they're a lawyer, they're a biologist, they're a musician, and artist, and that. The college do not yet fix what's their career yet. The college prepared them, gave them the value to then go on their next stage of career. And that's not the case in China. It's not the case in the Soviet Union, right? Once you come out of college, you're molded. You become that robot. You become that artificial intelligence.
Yeah, your path has been chosen.
Yeah, yeah. You then become a cog of the society, cog of the machine. You have you don't have your own value. And so that already hurts their capability of invention. But the current situation where a whole nation is so prone to deception, stealing is deception. It's because the system under the CCP forces people to be dishonest in many ways, in many, many different ways. The worst way, of course, is the political way. I have described in my previous interview that, you know, there's always political purge. There are always political movements. And to protect themselves, you never know when you'll be sold out or backstabbed by your friends. You become devious. You become protective. And if necessary, you sell others out. You know, you sell your friends out, backstab them. Mm-hmm. And so that forces the unfortunately, it's true. I mean, I'm using the word. People may not realize that it forces people to be dishonest, to cut corners. See, the traditional Chinese culture, there's an important concept called, Chinese word called the shen du, meaning be vigilant when alone. Because when you're alone is when nobody watches you. And that's the time that you're prone to do wrong things. So the traditional Chinese culture teaches one to be honest to oneself, self-honesty. And unfortunately, the self-honesty is losing in this country as well. I'm sorry to warn that. But mm-hmm. in China, the self-honesty was forced away by the government. And because of that, when you don't have that, when you don't have that self-restraint, self-honesty, when you study in the United States, when you come across a business secret or important discovery that could make you a lot of money, you'll steal it. And once you're stolen it, of course you cannot use it in the United States. Where's the best place for you to steal that and make money for yourself? China. And that's why it's not the Chinese people, it's the system
sure.
that have forced them to act this way. And that is why there's never been that large number of people who are so prone to take advantage or, you know, or to steal, to cut corner, to benefit from dishonesty, to not count on hard work, but trickery.
Yeah, you see that. You see that in every field, too. Every product, every discipline. You see the corners being cut, and the.
And last time I talked about the 1,000 talent mm-hmm. program,
right?
Yeah. Last week in the United States, the supposed head of this program or a liaison person in the United States was arrested in New York. And you can look into that news. Okay? So, we're talking about 1,000 talent. These are the top, those the brightest scholars that the government would recruit. If they don't, they're not right, then the government wouldn't, or the Chinese Communist regime wouldn't even look, let them. So these are the brightest scientists, engineers, right, that, you know, that the regime would pay attention to. So they're supposed to be role models. But they are
right.
Also at the same time.
But they can't.
The leading sea. And that's the scary part. That reminds us. I don't know whether you think about it. I thought about the Nazi doctors.
Yes.
They are experts in medicine or in whatever, but they are the worst
Using it for evil. Dr. Chen, we have run out of time, believe it or not. That was a swift hour. We will have to do this again. We appreciate you
sharing.
Yeah,
we've got to have you back. That was such great information.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can find all this information in the archive of today's program at wethepeopleradio.us, and you've been listening to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM.